At the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games in Beijing, a star was born and a scandal. Around the world, cameras, including NBC TVs, which kindly let us use that tape, focused on 9-year-old Lin Miaoku, cute as a button, as she sang Ode to the Motherland. Except, as you probably know, she lip-synced to a recording of another girl, 7-year-old Yang Peiyi, and we learned that the substitution was ordered by a member of China's Politburo, who decided the 7-year-old was not pretty enough to be the face of her nation. She has crooked teeth. Masha Ma can empathize. Born and raised in China, she has her own story of rejection when she was a girl, and we'll hear from her in just a moment. But we also want to hear from you. It's easy to criticize China for image obsession in the national interest, but what about looks-based preferences here at home? Are we so different? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org, and you can let us know what you think on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Masha Ma joins us now from Toronto in Canada. She wrote about her experience in the Epoch Times, and nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Hello, Neil.
And tell us, describe what happened to you when you were a young girl.
Well, when I was 9, my school formed some ties with the Canadian school, and the school was going to choose some students to be pen pals with the Canadian students. So I asked to be a pen pal, but I was told I was not good-looking enough to represent the school.
How old were you?
I was 9.
That can be pretty crushing at any age, but at 9?
Yes, I remember very well, because it was really heartbreaking. And every day, in the following week after I was rejected, I would go back home and cry every day.
And you'll forgive me, why was it important for a pen pal to be pretty?
Well, we're going to be, the school is going to arrange some photo taking, and we're going to exchange pictures.
They eventually changed their minds, though.
No. Well, my mom always tried to tell me that I'm pretty.
No, I meant they changed their minds about allowing you to be a pen pal.
Well, surprisingly, yeah, I was told that I was chosen by the vice principal of the school because she thought I looked fine.
And you were a good writer.
I guess so. the vice principal basically thought I was writing well, so I guess that's why he chose me.
And interestingly enough, you were told, even at the level of 9-year-old school children writing to each other, one in China and one in Canada, you were told some things that you were supposed to write. You remember, you describe in your piece your pen pal told you that she had a brother and was raising goldfish at home, and your response was?
Let's contribute to the friendship between China and Canada. I sounded pretty cool as 9 years old, right? I know. I think that's the sad part. Many children learn how to talk that way. And I think they learn from the media, from their teachers and even their parents. And nowadays, if you go on the streets and interview some Chinese people, asking them about their feeling about the Olympic Games, lots of them sound like they're working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
And interestingly, the 7-year-old, after this incident came to light, said, well, she was fine with it and that she was just happy that her voice was used to the broadcast in the Ode to the Motherland.
Oh, I'm sure if that happened to me, I would sound that cool. I would say something similar. I think that's something really sad. You know, our children, as grown-ups, they learn to develop two faces. They learn how to talk to media, and I'm sure she's crying privately.
It's hard to imagine that she couldn't be, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet one of the questions you raised is this member of the Politburo, and I'm sure other people too, said the decision had to be made in the national interests, and in a way they wanted to present the best face possible to the outside world.
Well, you know, I'm really suspicious about this national interest. We've seen so many crimes have been committed under the name of national interests. And I think it's really the theology of communism, which tried to tell you, okay, you are just a cog of the giant state machine, and the purpose of your existence is to make it look perfect. And your personal dignity or life is really worth nothing. And you can be replaced very easily by another cog if we're not satisfied with you.
When did you learn that you were not a cog in the great machinery of the state?
Well, I guess I never wanted to be a cog, first of all. And I came to Canada about 4 years ago, and I was really surprised by how the government is treating its own citizens. Also, I learned the Tiananmen Massacre. That was a really turning point in my life because
when the demonstration at Tiananmen Square was crushed by troops.
Oh, when that happened, it was in elementary school.
Yes,
and I was told those students were mobs, and I believed it, of course. So I came to Canada and I saw people gathering on the campus of University of Toronto, and it was in memory of those students who were killed, and it was really shocking to me. And I think there was a point when I realized I have been told lies by my government. So I tried to find out what really happened, not just to the Tiananmen Massacre, but also Tiananmen Square Massacre, but also to the Tibetans, Falun Gong, to all those people.
Having written an article like this, will you be welcome back in China?
I don't think so. Actually, I believe right now I have this interview with you, and I believe in the eyes of some of my countrymen, I'm a traitor right now. But, you know, I think it's very important for people to have access to free information. As long as they know the truth, people don't believe in the lies of the communists anymore, and they can have more courage to speak out.
Yet we have not seen a single demonstration thus far during the entire Olympic Games.
You mean?
In China.
Single demonstration by Chinese people?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe there were some, but they were, I'm sure policemen would jump on them as soon as they saw any,
mm-hmm.
and even before the Western media arrived to the spot. And also, I think people, even though they don't demonstrate, but they have their own thoughts, they just don't say it. People like my parents, and like my friends, many of my friends I know, they don't agree with what the government does, but they just don't dare to go to the, say, Tiananmen Square to demonstrate publicly, because that might be detrimental not just to their own life, but also to the life of their relatives.
We're talking with Masha Ma, born and raised in China, now living in Toronto, where she's a student. And we're talking about an article she wrote for the Epoch Times called Yang Peiyi, You're Not Ugly, They Are. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Beverly. Beverly with us from Baton Rouge in Louisiana.
I wondered if there's some sort of way that someone we could email that they still have an opportunity to let that little girl sing at the closing ceremonies. And I would think all over the world people would be upset about this.
Maybe her dentist can do some quick work and get her ready for the closing ceremonies. What do you think about that idea, Masha Ma?
Well, I think it would be good if they could let the girl to sing. After all, she deserves acknowledgement of her beautiful voice. I also feel sorry for the other girl as well. I think it's just so unfair to any of them, because I read the article. It said the other girl, she was not aware that her voice was not hers, and now she realized she was just a fraud, and it must be very devastating to her as well.
Beverly, thanks for the suggestion. I'm not sure. Maybe an email to the Embassy of China here in Washington, D.C.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Okay.
Let's go to Curtis. And Curtis is with us calling from Rock Hill in South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi, Curtis.
I can barely hear you.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was a commander of a basic training company at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I had two very hardworking drill sergeants that didn't quite fit the recruiting poster mode. So
even for drill sergeants?
These were drill sergeants, yes. And they were very hardworking drill sergeants, but my bosses did not want to let them march in the graduation ceremonies. One had dark glasses by prescription. He was light sensitive, and the other was a weightlifter, so he's a really big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bosses didn't want to let them march. They didn't want the parents to see them.
this in the context of an army situation where uniformity. Well, you're all wearing uniforms.
Well, yeah, of course they were in uniform. It's just that they didn't fit the body mold that they wanted to project.
And how did they react to that?
Well, they didn't like it, and neither did I. In fact, I let them march anyway. And in fact, my company won the marching trophy.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, we liked it. I got in trouble for it, but...
What kind of trouble?
March. Huh?
What kind of trouble?
Well, I'd get chewed out pretty good.
Well, evidently you survived.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got over it.
And looking back on it, you must be pretty proud of your decision.
Yeah, it's actually one of the proudest moments in my career, I think.
Curtis, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Again, our guest is Masha Ma, who writes a weekly column on culture for the Chinese edition of Epoch Times. She's with us from Toronto. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Anthony on the line. Anthony with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First of all, I love your show. I listen to it all the time, so thank you for broadcasting it.
Well, thanks for that.
Second thing is I'm married to a Chinese national who's recently immigrated to the United States, and when I first met her and explained how we in the West perceive the Chinese government and the way it controls the media and the information that it feeds to its citizens, was met with a lot of skepticism. Oh, no, that couldn't possibly be what's going on. You're lying, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then over time, as she began to read, you know, books that were published outside of China about Mao, about, you know, the Great Leap Forward, about what's going on, and her eyes were beginning to be opened, it became quite apparent how shocked, crushed in some ways, traumatized in other ways she became when she realized that she had been basically lied to almost all of her life about very significant events that are going on in her own country. And now she, you know, she's almost gone to the other extreme where she doesn't believe anything that's being told to her by her own country. And I guess my question for your guest is, given the fact that the Chinese government can control the media sources, even down to the internet websites as closely as they can, what real hope is there that the Chinese people are ever going to really know the truth of what's going on in their country?
Well, I think, first of all, nowadays, many people can travel freely abroad, and I came to Canada as an international student, and that was really a good chance for me to know the world and know the truth. And even as long as I know, even within China, people who can now travel outside, they have tools to break the internet block. For example, our newspaper, The Epoch Times, is very critical of the Chinese human rights situation, and we receive response from inside China from people who got the tools and could break the internet block. And we were really surprised by how many people actually could read our articles.
However, given that still, I think the latest number I heard, only about 250 million people in China have access to the internet, that still leaves well over a billion who do not. How on earth are those people ever going to learn what's really going on absent having a computer in their own home?
Well, I think it's that's also something that we should work on. It's not just some job that journalists should do, but also, for example, this time at the chance for the Olympic Games, Westerners, they can go to China and they... some people protest against the oppression of human rights, and they are hurt by Chinese people. So I think it's a long way to go.
Anthony, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get Katie on the line. Katie's calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi, Katie.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
Hi.
You're on the air. Go ahead,
please. Hi, I'm from China, and I wanted to just say a few things. First of all, I am very disappointed with what happened, and I am ashamed as a Chinese with regards to what happened, and putting that aside, much is being also said about human rights and integrated issues, this, that, the other, and I agree with all that. I do want to just comment on, you know, kind of how this little girl might feel, just kind of from the Chinese cultural standpoint. The reality is, in China, looks are very important. I mean, it might have come from thousands of years ago where, you know, if you have better looks, you're probably blessed by the gods and this, that, the other, and you're just more favored among people. And in fact, even today, a lot of decisions are made based on looks. I mean, I can just tell you some job applications will flat out ask for photos to be, you know, pasted on the job application, or, you know, some people are rejected because of maybe they're not tall enough, maybe they're not pretty enough, their teeth are crooked, this, that, the other. So I really think that it's possible. And earlier on, your guest had mentioned that, you know, this little girl probably cries in private. Maybe. But it's also possible that this little kid is totally okay with it because I think she's adorable. I think she's very cute, but by some standards, she's not cute enough, doesn't measure up quite the same. You know, and then she's saying, okay, I'm not as cute as this other girl. I'm going to just have to accept that, and we have to look good as China, da, da, da. And that's what they go with. And I think, you know, I honestly think in most Chinese mind, again, putting aside the integrity issue, it's deception issue. I think just promoting the looks, this, that, the other, I think that's by and large acceptable in the Chinese society.
Katie, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. You get the last word. We appreciate your call, though.
Thank you.
And Masha Ma, we're out of time. I would like to give you a chance to respond. Excuse me, but we're out of time.
Sure. I think that's not the point of my article. The point of my article is the individual's dignity and life is not respected by the regime. And that's the point.
Masha Ma joined us now from Toronto, Canada. She wrote about her experience in the Epoch Times. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Tomorrow, the debate over psychologists' involvement in the interrogation of detainees. We'll hear from both sides. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.